Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today I am joined by Jeff Shackelford, Golf Channel contributor and also owner and CEO, COO, CFO of jeffshackelford.com. Jeff and I talk a great deal about what's going on in the world, obviously, and how it pertains to golf. It's obviously tough times with the coronavirus and everything going on with the mask closures, the increased cases. I hope everybody out there is being safe and practicing social distancing. I think that's the smartest thing to do right now. But we talk a lot about the impacts on golf and some of the positives, how golf could really benefit from this kind of reset. So everybody be safe, and I hope you guys are all doing well, and hopefully this takes your guys' mind off things for a little bit. Without further ado, here is Jeff Shackelford.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
All right, Jeff, this crazy times here. I know you covered golf adjacently kind of during the 9/11 stuff. How would you compare it to that?
It feels very similar to me in terms of the kind of what are we going to do question and realizing that things like golf travel won't be the same for a while, probably that being the most important notion to the golf industry and to golfers. On the other hand, you could make the case that at some point the destination rural golf resort might look appealing where there are fewer people. There's just so many questions at the moment that you don't have an answer to, just like 9/11. And I hope that people just take the time to step back and be quiet. I'm just kind of appalled at some of the stuff I've seen. And I'm struggling as somebody who has a website and want to keep it going and keep it active. But I'm also struggling with, I don't want to be putting things out that you just simply do not need to know. You know, nobody needs to know that Paula Kramer's listed her mansion for $6.3 million. And nobody needs to know that, Billy and Rory are in a Peloton numbers battle and really nobody needs to know somebody's view on the Premier Golf League right now. It's a pandemic. I don't know how else to put it. It's a very serious time and we need to focus on the people who are suffering and taking care of ourselves and protecting others in this time when we've been told to do so. And it'll be a time, if we're quiet, to reflect on the sport and where it will go as this, what's the president use, as the wave passes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been struggling. Obviously, I think there's a role for media in times like this and it providing an escape for people as they see stuff around them in such chaos that there's definitely an aspect of being in the golf media space where you can provide somebody with entertainment when the world is seemingly devoid of it. But at the same time, I've just struggled. I've got all the time in the world on my hands right now. You know, I tend to never have time and I just have trouble even focusing on putting 500 words together right now.
Yeah.
Which is, yes. You know, that's the tricky thing. And
that's okay, though.
Yeah,
that's the right thing. You know, I don't think people I think that's the one positive in this is we're in a society where you just got to constantly be moving and producing and this and that. And yeah, this is one of those times this week, maybe next week, too, where you just don't do that. It's a time to reflect. So view that as, to me, the positive of this.
You picked up any hobbies? Has he been,
no, I down? Haven't. No, I haven't gone there. You know, for a writer, as you know, working from home and quarantining is really what we do normally. So this isn't really a tough one at the moment for me. The toughest question is, you know, what kind of things do you cover and not cover? And I've just really gone kind of full bore into, if it's not about news related to the virus and cancellations and scheduling and the big picture stuff with the major championships, to me, everything else is tough to cover. But there is going to be a point where I think it'll be fun to throw things out there as people start to get the itch to get back out and live to put things out. So to me, it's a time to do some things and ponder those things and make notes and all that kind of stuff and do some chores and clean and avoid people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing is just distance yourself. So it's crazy to think.
That said, I'm kind of one of those people. It's like golf looks like a great thing to me. You know, Andrew Cuomo gave a wonderful address today, and he mentioned getting out, hike, walk, enjoy our parks. Obviously, don't get too close to people. I was kind of hoping he'd mention golf because I do believe that golf courses ideally should be able to stay open. Certain areas, clearly the workers can't get there to maintain it, but it seems to me like the sport is a good place to be as long as you're not in a 19th hole and sitting next to a bunch of people
or in a cart.
Those would be the two places I'd avoid. And, you know, people can change their shoes in the parking lot at most places. You know, maybe those clubs that have that rule that view that as one of the great atrocities in all of life when somebody changes their shoes in the lot can waive that that house etiquette rule and shut the clubhouses down and have a starter, somebody who can collect some revenue and money if it's a public course. And it seems to me maintenance workers, if they can get to the golf course safely, it's a great chance to keep them working. And you just can't let a golf course go without major repercussions. And in the markets where things are just okay, it seems like a good place for people to go, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing is the maintenance worker safety. As long as that is feasible, I think that golf is an incredible avenue. I think where I wanted to talk about this a little bit as positives coming out of it is that, you know, one of the things that this could spurn with the way the world is, if maintenance, you know, becomes a four-man job or a three-man job, you know, alternating so people don't get sick coming in every day. It could become where it'd be a great thing if golf had a little bit lower maintenance expectations. We're seeing golf courses already taking rakes out of bunkers. You know, how good is that? A bunker actually being a hazard.
Yeah, I think like 9/11, this is an opportunity to reset some values. Maybe they're forced on us, but things were getting a little bit silly of late. And also things were going in a negative direction in terms of the labor pool for golf course maintenance. So that job working in golf course maintenance, knowing the safety standards that most operations have now, they have a lot of masks. they are places that are just so much better run now with the way the modern superintendent works and is educated, and they're great places to work. Again, assuming when we get to a certain place where people don't have their kids at home and they can commute safely on however they get to a golf course job, it's actually going to look like an attractive place to be. But that said, one would hope that golfers playing during this time at golf courses that are cutting back and don't mow the greens every day and don't mow the fairways every day and experience some of those values, see that it still is a wonderful game without having to have greens be 13 and double cut and the stip meter speed posted and whatever other bizarro things that go on.
It's an interesting sense that and this is just my view. I'm not an expert. You know, there's 100 experts talking all the time, and I've been consuming it just from a personal, you know, we put on events, so I've been paying attention to coronavirus for weeks now, and just thinking, you know, worst case scenario, and here we are. But one of the things I look at is the mass gatherings could be gone for a while for us, and it could be something where golf becomes a more popular activity because it's something you can do outside. I think people, the more that we're shut in from this, are the more they're going to appreciate the outdoors and being able to be out and away from people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a huge opportunity, and I hate that word, but if we're looking for something to cling to and or provide people with a some hope and some things to think about, that unlike maybe other things, say 2008, the market collapsed then, that this is an opportunity. As you say, people are going to get cooped up. They're going to be driving their relatives nuts. The values of golf that have really taken a hit, I think, in people's view in the last few years, for whatever reason that, and we kind of can guess some of those reasons, and they're all different, and some makes more sense than others, some make no sense at all, that this opportunity in this awful time will be something that highlights the beauty of the sport and the values of the sport and the things that are good about it, exercise, being outdoors. It's going to look a lot safer as a place to be than a gym for a while or a sporting event. And so I think the sport hopefully will see those things and figure out ways to capitalize. And I don't know how those are yet. Again, it's just way too soon. But I hope those are the things that people are thinking about as this unfolds.
Yeah, I think that's where there's, you know, like you said, using opportunity is always something you don't want to use.
It's the greatest word.
But you look at what is going to happen, and gyms are going to be less popular for the near future. It's just, you know, I think my gym still hasn't closed, and it actually kind of makes me upset.
Wow.
But, you know, you look at golf, and golf could almost, you know, have an opportunity to reinvent itself, is assuming, you know, the courses can withstand the financial burden that's going to be placed on them for the next 2 months. But the opportunity to provide small scale golf where you can get these hours that people have devoted to the gym and get them an outdoor activity and give them a spot they can go walk and play golf for an hour would be amazing.
It would, and it's going to be incumbent on the industry right now to think about ways, and not another PSA program where we put $10 million into ads, but actually think about ways to help golf courses promote themselves in this time, but also not look tone deaf to what's going on. And I think that's kind of that interesting balance. You know, I've been pondering on my blog, and I'm just kind of doing about one thing a day. I just don't want to, I'm not looking to get hits. I really just want to try to step in and offer something and then step out. And one of those has been the question of, you know, is it a bad look right now for somebody to be out playing golf? Is that going to be part of what goes into the thinking at certain cities or at certain country clubs or certain resorts? And I'm not sure what the answer is, but I think perception is a tricky one, and one that they need to be able to address, that the look is bad. I think in about a week, in the places where the weather is good enough to be playing golf, people will look at golf as a very good thing if these courses don't shut down. Obviously, the city of San Francisco is on a full lockdown, so they're obviously not going to send anybody out to go maintain Harding Park, which is why the PGA Championship is now officially postponed, and the PGA of America can reassess whether they can play there and those kinds of things. But there are other cities like Austin where they've also kind of lumped in golf with its other
Philadelphia
pools.
Did too.
Yeah, and I'm worried LA will, but it's just one of those things where I think it would be worse well, especially in our city, to be perfectly blunt, if the golf course is closed, there's going to be a greater chance those they become encampments for our horrible homeless situation here. There are things that you could see where it just doesn't do any good to close. You can take precautions. You can close the clubhouse areas. You can do things to help the maintenance team. But at the same time, if I'm a maintenance worker, I sure love that job right now a lot more than a lot of places to be having to work. And again, they have ample safety equipment and in terms of masks and things for spraying, and they have guidelines. And so I think it's something that is, again, it's a positive, but at the right time. I don't know when that is, but I think as people sit around and have nothing to do at home, they are going to think through, well, wait a second. The golf course is a good place to be. Don't touch the flagstick. We got the rule now, right?
Yeah. Leave
the flagstick in. Don't touch the flagstick. The rakes are gone.
Rakes are gone. Ball washers are gone. You know, there could be the demise of the tee box trinkets.
That's okay.
Those are good things. And, you know, if carts are down, you know, people are walking more, it just becomes a healthier, the whole perception of golf would really change. I think if all of a sudden bunkers were maintained, you know, at a reasonable level where it was, you know, once every couple days and you didn't have all the exorbitant spending on things that have no impact on golf and people start to understand that, hey, this is just a great outdoor activity. This is what, because I mean, that's what I love about golf. It's funny. I had, I'm sure you feel this way sometimes, is that I feel like my tank and my golf soul kind of gets empty sometimes. It gets down low because I get, working in golf, it's different. And I had one of these experiences. I was out at Banded Dunes. I played Banded Trails by myself at 5 p.m. Sun going down, and I played in 2 hours, and it was like, you know, Banded Trails is a hike, you know, you're going up and down hills. Afterwards, I felt like I got a great workout in, and I felt it was just one of those moments where you're like, God, this is such a great game, you know,
right.
But it was so low maintenance at that time. My rangefinder was dead. You know, all I was doing is walking up, hitting the ball, walking forward, and it was just incredible. And then sure enough, 2 days later, everything's canceled.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's something that will become apparent to people in the climates where they can, when they can go out and play. But yeah, I think that there's an opportunity. I was just, as you were talking, I was pondering what a course could do if they're limited by maintenance. And, you know, maybe you kind of, your daily maintenance is on just 1-9 and we only have 9 holes open at a time, as a way to do a little bit of just take a little burden off a crew, but also a little bit of this mindset of maybe this is our chance to highlight loops of holes, 9 holes, 12 holes, highlight more evening golf. I don't think enough courses do that. They're so worried about closing the clubhouse and the cart barn down. Well, maybe there's a place now for people really playing on public courses till dark, and who cares except for the one person who does have to lock up the parking lot, those kinds of things. So,
well, I think one of the constraints with evening golf's always been childcare, you know, and now that people have their kids at home, are going to have their kids at home all the time for pretty much probably until at least the fall. You know, we're looking at a time where if you want to play golf, you're going to have to squeeze it in at some point. And evenings might be the best time because it's no longer, hey, this is the only time I get to spend with my kids.
Right, right. No, that's a great point. And it's also a great time to possibly get kids into the golf sphere again, not just through the usual stuff, Drive Chip or Top Golf or whatever, but to get them out on a course. And especially as you've noted, as they get really anxious being cooped up, it's going to come as a welcome relief. So again, it's a tricky one. I hope the game is just patient, but obviously not too patient, because if a bunch of courses are convinced they just have to close and maintenance completely slides, then we have a major issue. But if there's some way to find a middle ground that keeps places open and functional and maintained enough, that it just could be outstanding for the game to have this moment and to show people what it can be.
Yeah, that's
about the only positive I can find in all this, by the way.
I've been searching too. It's I think that the
it's
other
a good
thing,
one. It's
it is
better
a,
than most, well, Gary would say.
It's a great one because you could see some courses where if they close down their clubhouse operations and they focus just on golf for a while, they could see that, hey, look, like this clubhouse is just burying us in money, you know? And golf could survive on its own.
Yeah, and there are a lot of places that have put a lot of money into clubhouses the last few years or doing it right now. And boy, I those places, those are bills that are going to be tough to swallow right now. But you're right. There are plenty of others that can just accept that, well, we're not going to have any group business and we're gonna have to really make the golf work for a while. And so hopefully that can sustain some of those places that relied too much on thinking that they had to have the clubhouse revenue to make the whole thing work. And then those reduced maintenance values will hopefully maybe reduce a few costs. So we'll see. And then, you know, again, I there's a major issue coming forward with people wanting to work in the golf course maintenance industry. And this is a fantastic opportunity to suddenly say, hey, this is a good place to be, both for your health and in the future, if there's ever another pandemic, and in the present. And it's a great career if the industry can kind of hang in there through this.
Hey, breaking news while we're talking.
Yeah.
Ryder Cup postponed till 2021 per James Corrigan.
Okay, well, that's one I wondered about, and I think that's probably the right thing to do. Actually, I had a thought the other night that, you know, why don't we just scrap Whistling Straits altogether and just turn the President's Cup into the Ryder Cup next year, even though it's Quail Hollow? Just do it. Skip the President's Cup. Nobody's excited about the President's Cup at Quail Hollow next year. The U.S. will probably win very easily. So let's just scrap it. Let's just give it the time off. And the PGA of America can use their partnership to turn Quail Hollow into the Ryder Cup venue next fall.
What am I supposed to do with my 2021 President's Cup gear, though?
Well, yeah, I'm sure that you stocked up on that, because I know how much that President's Cup has been on your radar since it was announced. I mean, nobody is excited about that one. So, yeah, that would be my proposed trade. And that's the one thing that'll be interesting in all this, is how these governing bodies get together in a room and sort out some of these things. You know, I had a post today. Luke Carradine wrote a good piece on, you know, are we going to – I think he's right. The majors are just going to be so tough this year. So maybe we'll have later in the year one Hail America type tournament. And it's hard for me to picture those groups getting together and doing such a thing and making it work, but they're going to need to, and they're going to need to understand that, yeah, maybe we need to just skip a President's Cup and that kind of a thing. I don't know if they're capable, but I hope they are. And I hope they're open-minded. And also don't try to force things that just shouldn't be forced right now.
Yeah, you know, it makes you look at everything going on. And you know, the NBA hasn't canceled yet. It looks,
yeah, they're toast.
It looks worse and worse. But, you know, a lot of these sports at least have the opportunity to do things because they have an off season. I'm wondering if one of the big things that we'll see from this is that, you know, the PGA Tour eventually scales back its schedule.
Well, I don't like these topics that much, but just as an example, look at the fall this year. You have the Greenbrier on the schedule, you have the Astros Foundation event. Now, the oil companies haven't had a real good few weeks, and they're the ones who put together the sponsorship. It's an umbrella there put together by Jim Crane, owner of the Houston cheating Astros. And he, I would just guess that event's got some problems in terms of the view of it in the community right now. It's not one that does the tour really want to be associated with the Astros. This, again, thinking if things get better, I'm very well aware, so please don't send the Twitter hate. This is just
is brainstorming.
Speculative. And the Greenbrier, obviously, tough time it's going to be for that resort, I would assume, for a while. Although I believe West Virginia still hasn't had a
cases.
Yeah, there you go. But
they're going to Bob Evans.
Yeah, let's just assume that event is one too that is one that's a little bit shaky. I think you're going to see some sponsorship issues, and that's why I was sort of flabbergasted on multiple levels by the rush to report the Premier Golf League rejections and the rush to declare the death of it. And you know, I'm just sitting there watching the futures, and I don't even watch the markets that much, and thinking, do these people know that FedEx is stock price is plummeting, their future is bleak as it would appear, unless they're purchased by Walmart or somebody else. You know, a bigger issue is the FedEx Cup. If you really want to get into first world issues, then a league that's not alive yet versus the ones that are alive, and forget the PGA Tour for a moment. The European Tour's got major issues in this with sponsorship. And as you see from Mike Wann's statements, he's noting the sponsors in everything he does because he's trying to send the signal, we're thinking about you. We appreciate you. Please keep an open mind through this. This is going to be tough. And that's such a different approach to all this than what the tour, PGA Tour has done, which was all about the players at the Players Championship. And I don't know how much they put out things like that where they're thinking about the sponsors. And right now that's going to be your most important thing as a business when all this does start up again, because some of them have taken a big, big hit, and it's going to look very, very bad to be putting millions of dollars into a golf tournament sponsorship when you've laid off people.
Yeah, you look at like Valero Texas Open, you know?
Yeah.
It's a big, big dollar amount. I think, has anybody in golf looked better in the last few weeks than Mike Wann?
Yeah, he seems to know how to read the room. And I thought that was, and obviously he knows some things we don't know, but it's clear he knows he has players who have sponsors who are not very tolerant of people not making their allotted number of starts. And so he went out of his way to note that concern because he knows some of his players need that endorsement money. So he really came off as somebody who was in tune with what is going on and the gravity of it and the kind of the grand scheme.
What do you think will happen? Say, you know, we're now through essentially May with cancellations. Say we get to a point where we're in August looking at, and I don't want to, you know, speculate we're going to get there. I hope we're playing sooner. You know, maybe we're playing without fans at some point.
That seems more likely, yeah.
But we get there. How are they going to handle the season? Do you think they'll, you know, do they end it on the usual time or do they extend it? I mean, at this point, I was looking at this today, is like if you go to this, how do you handle the end of the season and, you know, where players are in the FedEx Cup? You'd have some guys that are outside the top 125 that I'm sure the tour would not want there.
That's a tough one. I hadn't thought about that one yet, to be honest with you. I think we've all been kind of under the assumption that there would be a resumption, but you're right. As today's news is unfolding, as we're talking here, it's becoming clear that this season is in trouble. Yeah. So I have no idea what the answer would be, but again, I think they can. That's one they can sort through that's an easier one to me to solve than some of the other things, like losing sponsors permanently. And but they also, I think before they even get into that kind of thing, the some of these organizations, and really namely all the PGA Tour, I feel like the other organizations so far have handled this very well, but they just have to first show a grasp of what is going on. And they just didn't do that going into Players Week, where other people who are paid very well to spot these things could see where things were going and had plans ready to go for the most part and reacted pretty nimbly, and they did not. So the first thing they really need to grasp is kind of their sense, their place in the world of sport and in the world and what's important. So at least they're now kind of in line with everybody else and getting ahead and obviously canceling events through mid-May when we have certain warnings that are guidelines that are in place for.
I find myself now, I mean, 4 days ago, 5 days ago now, but I it feels like a year ago, but I can't believe how disappointed I was in the way they handled the whole thing with the writing was all over the wall and I know the world was moving so fast and I don't think anybody envisioned we'd be where we are today on Thursday, but at the same time, it seemed to me that there was a decision that was the safe, smart decision and one that was very, you know, kind of reckless, and the reckless one was made.
Yeah, I mean, letting people on the grounds Thursday at the Players was astonishing. I kind of could see starting the tournament and what they did there, but it was a week of astonishing decisions and misreading, and obviously some of the blame goes on Jay Monahan, but you also have to blame the people around him and the people he has surrounded himself with, that somebody wasn't in the room saying, all right, let's just go worst case scenario here. You just don't, I mean, somebody I would hope is, but you got the sense that somebody wasn't, just starting with the CNBC thing on Monday. You know, where's the person saying, okay, worst case scenario, you're going to go on, there's going to be all these graphics and blood red of plunging markets and horrible things. And Andrew Ross Sorkin, who's going to have his phone just going ballistic with CEOs and people wanting to know what the heck's going on, is going to be sitting there talking to you. He might not be very happy, and he might ask you tough questions and make a fool of you. What do you think? Maybe we should cancel. You know, where is that person in the room doing those kinds of things? And I kind of sense that Jay really was let down by his senior executive staff, the VP core, that is, there's got to be somebody that provides that point of view for him. And that's his fault for not surrounding himself with that person. It's the PGA Tour's fault for making every person who wants to be an executive there go meet with a conformity doctor and Atlanta for 2 days and answer questions. And it you're just not going to have that kind of stuff in the room that saves you from embarrassment. So it was a doozy. It's not going to age well.
That's the thing. It's just, I don't want to put myself in a similar situation, but you know, I was thinking about one of our events, you know, with 100 people,
right,
on Tuesday, and thinking about like, I'm going to have to cancel, and you're bringing together thousands of people. And something I talk about with the PGA Tour on Shotgun Start a lot is the idea of like every league has players and owners, and they kind of pull against each other. And in this situation, I kind of feel, I think one of the things that has, in my, just this is just my opinion, is that the fact that we have essentially an organization that's got one interest in mind, the players, and that's it, is kind of detrimental, especially in cases like this where, you know, it was the fact that, the thing I was upset about, and people are like, oh, the players will be fine. It's like, it's not about the players. It's all the elderly that are in the crowd.
Or the people who have to work, who who don't have a choice. Television people and volunteers or food and beverage workers, on and on. That was what all I was cared about. And everything you read was about the player's safety, the player's safety, the player's safety. And then, of course, CT Pan goes and tells you that he's going through the clubhouse and there's no hand sanitizer and people are coughing at lunch. He later reveals that. But again, who cares about the players? Let's care about the people who have to be there or else will lose their job or will look bad to their boss who aren't making a whole lot of money. And that was what I couldn't believe, and couldn't believe there weren't statements begging seniors to stay away, statements about we're going to be wiping down the security apparatus when you come in, and the grandstands dealing with that, or we're going to close the grandstand. I mean, it was just as if they weren't watching what was going on in the news. It was incredible.
Yeah, it's a different, you know, I think nobody thinks that Jay Monahan's a bad guy. Like,
No.
And like, but it was just an alarming lack of awareness to what was going around outside of the Ponte Vedra bubble down there.
Well, and I think in trying again, think about where we're going to go coming out of this whole thing is this question of, are the players the game, or is golf the sport the most important thing? And we know this keeps coming up because of the distance topic. Look at this Premier Golf League stuff where the top three players in the world have rejected it. Therefore, it is dead. And you know, it's a concept of a tour where if it had been hatched 4 years ago, people like Alex Noren and Danny Willett and Bubba Watson would have been likely people invited to be part of it, and they're not in that place now. The game changes quickly, and it's also the flaw, by the way, of the Premier League is that the turnover in golf is so extreme. The way it can go bad quickly with the slightest injury is extreme. It's cruel. And so the sport, though, still kind of revolves around the players, and they'll say something and we run around in circles, and the game's going to be here way past the time that a lot of these people are around, and a lot of them won't be relevant in 3-4 years possibly. So this notion that they are the sport is, to me, really dangerous and bizarre and disturbing. And so when we have the distance debate, we have to get tour pros' opinions. Well, they have a selfish financial stake for their views, for the most part. Some of them ignore that. And it's a question we just have to consider. Is that why people are involved in golf? Are they attracted to the game because of the players or the actual sport?
And see, this is something I think that is unintended consequence of this whole thing. It could be a positive. You know, I think that'd be the wrong thing, a positive that comes to this. We might get to a point where more of the conversation's about golf than it is about the players, because the players are shut down for a while, and that could be a very healthy thing for the game of golf. I always fall back on this. There's so many people that play that don't watch, you know? And yet the vacuum of golf coverage, 95% of it goes towards the players, because that's what the way it is in other sports. But golf doesn't fit the model that other sports fit. You know, I played the last round of golf I played with, it was actually at Harding Park. I played with a buddy, and I played with a complete random guy. This guy, he was the perfect guy that would like characterize the golfer that everybody's trying to get to. He goes to Bandon Dunes twice a year. He plays public golf, and he doesn't watch a lick of golf. Doesn't read anything about golf or anything. And it became more and more clear as we played and got to know this guy. And it was amazing because, you know, even club companies, you could tell couldn't get him because he had, you know, mismatched clubs and everything. Like the only person that connects and communicates with that golfer regularly are golf courses, are the thing that are played on. And I think that's such an important thing, because I think there's, whether no governing body will admit it, That's the vast majority of golfers right there.
Mm-hmm. No, they won't admit it, and they don't like to hear it, and it's why they're always looking to create new viewers, new fans. That's why Top Golf's appealing to them. But that is a fascinating notion, how the core golfer like that has it doesn't have the attachment to or interest in pro golf to me like they should. It's still there, obviously, but it is stunning, and I've seen it with being on the Golf Channel, how many people will tell me they used to watch it, they don't watch it anymore. The core golfer kind of got lost in a pursuit of making the audience bigger, because that's what everybody's mentality has been. And whether it's any kind of golf media, it's we've got to grow the audience. We've got to bring in those new people, bring in the person who's just casually interested. And then by doing that, you dumb things down, or you don't pay attention to the things that would matter to the core audience. And then the core audience just kind of goes on their own way. There's plenty of time to be spent on the course, and they just disconnect. To me, that's bizarre. It's just amazing how we've lost that core person having the attachment to the professional game.
I think there's something in this, you know, reset we're going to be in here might help this a little bit, but there's this mentality in all walks of life. If you're not growing, you're dying.
Yes. Yeah. It's the, yeah. Exactly.
And I think that's the thing that golf's faced for so long. And I think the thing that they haven't realized is that their best avenue for growth is through evangelism, you know, through its core, their core audience, rather than the outward pursuit of new golfers.
I mean, how many people got in the game because they tagged along, or, you know, to the driving range or on the course, or as a kid, they sat in the cart, and it was the passion of other people that got them in the game. It wasn't necessarily a program. Might've been a teacher that got them more attracted to it and devoted. But yeah, how many of those people do it through a program and through something seemingly not necessarily authentic or something that's forced versus something that just kind of happened, and you see it, you look at it, and it allows you to sort of understand, take in some things, and that is a great way to get into the sport. And I guarantee most people you ask, that's how they got into it, the people who really stuck with it. And that's something the sport probably needs to cherish a little bit more, and golf courses need to be welcoming of, and of course, you know, they're not, of somebody to tag along to drive the cart, and all those little things need to be relaxed a little bit somehow to understand that's how you grow the game, the dreaded phrase.
That's why I always say, if golf courses allowed dogs, my wife, who's not a golfer, would come with me probably 8 times as much. She never comes with me unless the golf course allows dogs, because then she'll just come walk with our dog and then occasionally hit shots. And then all of a sudden, you know, you could see how it could change, where all of a sudden she hits more and more and more shots, and then she starts to play. But as it is right now, you know, she has no interest in going to play golf right now, but she would if she had an interest of, she loves going for walks with our dog. You know, and if it became just that, at the very lowest level, I've talked about this a million times on the pod, but it's wild. I think in a weird way, there's all these things. When the world kind of melts down, there's always things that can come out of it and really thrive and reinvent itself. And I think golf has an opportunity in this and what's going on to come out of it in a better place than it was when it entered, in a weird way. It's not going to look, a lot of people won't look at it the same way, but I think it could become an opportunity for it. And I hate that word, like we talked about, where it could really, you know, it could become somewhat of a national pastime again, like it was becoming in the late golden age.
Yeah. The key is going to be, when is that time appropriate to have that push or that discussion? You know, like right now, I'm just watching Twitter and seeing different signs of golf courses closing for various reasons, state of emergency kind of things. And that I completely understand that, obviously, but you also, there is going to be a point where somehow it needs to be conveyed that's just not going to be a good thing for the community to have these places become unmaintained and possibly open to being taken over in different ways or whatever it is. And it's just, but when is that, when do you have that conversation? To me, I'm extra sensitive right now. I just feel like those kinds of things need to be done very, very carefully. And so literally, and of course then anything related to the first world of pro golfers and their plight, especially the upper echelon is just way down the list, and protecting this pastime somehow and building on it is way more important. But it's just, we have to be sensitive to when that time is and how it will look to people to see people out playing golf while this is going on. Because right now, my guess is the reaction is that there will be a negative backlash. A week from now, after people have been cooped up, it might be seen as a welcome thing.
I think they should just take the pins out completely.
Why is that?
I think people will play better golf in general.
Hmm.
You know, then you take one more risk aspect out of the game, you know? Take the pin out.
Yeah.
And then it's one more reason that people are probably saying don't go play golf, you know?
Oh, because of what could be living and growing on the flag stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. If that's what it takes, then great. I say yes.
There could be a run on the end of the putter plunger, too.
Yeah, those are...
Could be the new toilet paper.
Yeah. Wow. There's a device I never thought I'd ever want to have on the end of my putter.
Yeah. So get at, obviously not the most fun topics to talk about, but the reality of golf right now. So if you had to guess, are we going to see a Masters this year?
No.
U.S. Open.
No.
PGA.
No.
FedEx Cup.
No. I think that through the summertime is really hard to picture. I could possibly see the playoff events maybe with no crowds, but it's, as of today, it just seems tough to envision that happening.
Yeah, it's wild times. So you got to,
and remember too that it's a very expensive thing to put on a tournament, and each tournament's different. And if they're insured, it's better for them to be forced to cancel than to try to put something on that really doesn't benefit anybody but the players. The charitable element goes, the fan element goes, the experience is just weird, and they don't collect some insurance money to take a less of a bite out of the big loss that they already sustain. And it, as painful as it is, it's probably the wiser thing to do, both financially and in terms of perception and just overall kind of sense of you're thinking of bigger things than a golf tournament.
Yeah.
Again, it's a case by case basis, obviously. Some are really vital to the community and big deals, and others, the community will be annoyed that you're trying to do this. It just, it's as a market by market, I believe was how Jay Monahan was viewing the virus a week ago.
Yeah, it's it'll be, I think it could, it's like the flip side of everything is if you did it with no fans, the problem is it still is going to take 1,000 people to put on a PGA tour.
Right, yeah, you still have people trying to travel there, stay in hotels. You're still going, you know, again, forget the players. It's the circus around, and those people, obviously by a certain point, they're really going to be wanting to work, to be paid, but we don't know what travel will be like and how safe it'll be and different things like that. So that has to be the priority over the needs of the players.
Yeah, well, you got a new podcast coming out.
Soon. Yeah, what a time to launch, huh? What a yeah,
you got depth and variety. You can talk about anything, you know. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I think this is also an opportunity where you know, the kind of clickbait golf era we've been living in with media, people are going to have to get depth here.
It's really going to be tested. It's already being tested. You just see some of the complete crap that's been put up in the last couple of days. And I feel for the people doing it, because, you know, there's a boss somewhere saying, all right, we got to create content. We got to get some numbers, got to keep this going. And I feel for the people who have to take those directives and put something up, and it's not easy and it's not fun. And frankly, it's in some cases, to me, it's just a huge credibility blow to those sites when you go there and you see some of the stories that are news and when they're not. So yeah, I'm battling that myself, but I'm just erring on the side of caution every chance I get. I'm going to try to put up some light stuff on my website and the occasional fun thing, and try to, again, when the time's right, do some looking back at some history stuff or things that are of interest. And the podcast will kind of be the same thing for now. It was going to be a little bit more news driven, and now it's going to be a little bit more chat driven for a while, because we've got some authors who have books to promote, and I want to hear from them and talk to them about those, because it's a good time to read. And that's kind of where I'm starting with it. It was going to be, I had a lot of different thoughts and had narrowed it down into a concept, and I just threw that description for the promotional pod that will go out on the little network. And that's going in the trash. I'm going to rewrite it again, kind of thinking of the virus, but I'm going to try to keep it not too long and light, fun, but also some serious stuff that relates to the sport, and try to talk to some smart people, and again, not throw stuff out there that's too
do some
and intimidating
abbreviated versions of your books. I mean, God, I'd listen to hours of that. I can't get some of your books; they're too expensive.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah, that some of them are out of print, and the algorithms have made them cost way more than they should be costing. You know, I've thought about that. I've actually got a few book ideas to that I'm going to be working on, and I've actually thought about one of them even just writing some of it, getting out in front and start posting a chapter on the site, and then kind of write the rest as I'm going. But I'm not sure I want to do that yet. But that's something I've considered. It's kind of a fun idea to me, but it's also a little scary, and it could be a total disaster. But that's the beauty of having your own blog. You just delete it if it's really bad.
You can try you can try all the stuff you want, and if it doesn't work and you suspend it, nobody usually knows.
This is true. This is the beautiful thing. I feel like golf architecture is tough, as you know, for podcasts and reading things. It could be tricky, but I'll take a look at that. That's an interesting idea.
I think, like, I'm assuming, like, one of the things is, like, when you did the book deals, there's no clauses to audio, audio rights.
A couple of them, the more recent ones, but geez, the rights have reverted to me on everything but my Cypress Point book, and I'm not going to do a live reading of Alistair McKenzie's Cypress Point. That would be, and then me trying to do a Scottish accent, even though he's English, he was English. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. So, I think it's better to focus on a couple of the new book ideas. But I may, I'd love to go back to the future of golf and highlight some things. But again, that could be a little bit of a combo platter of obnoxious humble bragging and also, we don't need to hear about that right now, kind of thing. So. It's just it's going to be a constant battle to see what is right to be talking about. But I feel pretty good, especially after this chat. I think we're kind of thinking the same way, and I'm guessing other people are in the golf industry, that this is an opportunity for the sport, and we should keep highlighting that the best we can, and hope that the elitist perception that a lot of people have doesn't lead communities and various businesses to quickly give up on the sport or quickly move to shut down facilities, but instead see this as a chance to make those places really valuable in this time.
Yeah, that's hopefully everybody. I think everybody, just the big thing has to be patient, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be lacking. And we're going to see, that's why we're going to see some really awful things posted on golf websites where, again, it's just somebody trying to keep a boss from firing them by churning out clickbait and all that stuff. So that is going to be the test where you see people exposed for not being patient, not just saying, hey, let's step back a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, in just society in general, we've become less and less patient because of technology, you know? So this is going to be the test for all of America, all of the world, really.
Where do you think the distance debate is now?
I was almost going to ask you that. I feel like it's going to be shut down.
Interesting. Yeah.
For a while.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, in terms of, okay, yeah, let me rephrase that. Where should we continue to have the distance debate?
I think it would make actually more sense than
yeah,
ever now.
I do too. Yeah.
I think one
at the right
things,
time. Maybe not this week. Maybe not next week. But at some point soon, right?
We've got this, you know, wonderful chance to somewhat reset some of the values of the game. And I think one of the things that the constant pursuit of the latest and greatest equipment and the cost that comes with it is very unhealthy for the game of golf.
Very, yeah.
The idea that, you know, the technology and the ball and the club didn't change for some 40 years, like how refreshing would it be that, like, you change your irons when your grooves wore out? And you changed your persimmon driver when it cracked, you know? Like that to me is something, you know, we should be looking at. I'm not saying go back to persimmon, but
no.
You know, like my driver is no longer the best. It is a bad thing. Like I think that the cost of golf equipment is a huge barrier. You know, people feel like that, you know, when I talk to friends, they're like, how much does a decent set of clubs cost? I'm like, yeah. You know, honestly, like probably like a couple $1,000s. They're like, oof, you know?
Oh, it's, yeah, it's woefully intimidating. And if they go used and they get stuff that's...
It doesn't fit them. It doesn't,
It doesn't
know?
Feel right either. You feel... Because one of the things that is fun about a sport is if you take it up is kind of getting the right gear and feeling good about that. And that's... So if you feel like you're just using garbage and basically glorified rental sets that look like somebody dragged them from behind their car, you feel less, it's just one more thing that makes you feel uncomfortable in a sport that makes people already so uncomfortable. And we just have to try to get rid of some of those, and not get rid, but downplay some of those things. And that's why to me, bifurcation is such a great thing, and it makes me just have so little respect for the manufacturers who bitch and moan about all this stuff. And then when you say, well, what about bifurcation? What about allowing you to make real beginner stuff that doesn't conform, but is just great for a beginner, really easy to hit, and cheaper to make, it's a way to get people in a great way, or a you know, a kid's drive chip and putt set that you can sell and things like they just have no imagination about those things. They're so locked in to the just more distance, more tech, more price, more bottom line that they really shouldn't. That's why it's just such a struggle to see how they should be part of the conversation when they don't seem open-minded to any kind of possible solution or different way of approaching this that's good for them and good for the sport.
The nonprofit golf needs most to be the biggest nonprofit is a nonprofit that just provides beginner sets of golf clubs to people.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't need to be the professional organization for
yeah, or just not. I mean, it's publicly traded companies being in the manufacturing business is just since that's happened, that's why we've been on this cycle, which I wrote about in the Future of Golf, and that's 15 years ago now. And that change has just been a killer.
Yeah, I mean, this could be like we've talked. This is almost could be a reset for not. It's not just golf. It's across the world. I think that you're going to see a lot of. Just change in some of it will be good change, you know?
Yeah. Well, I plan to at the right time, go back more into the distance report on my blog. Cause it did get, as we know, they focused a lot on these values and the things that matter to people. And that very robust survey data, when you see how many people answered that to me, it is just probably the least reported element of the distance report. And I'd love to hear more from somebody at the USGA to kind of, because I know some questions got more answers than others, but when you see the volume and that those were voluntary, to me really makes those results very powerful. And we know some of those things like shot tracker and the tracer technology and venues and certain things were valued so much more than distance. I mean, there's some really important findings in those numbers that just punch such huge holes in those trying to either resist the change or just even resist the conversation.
It's funny. You say that. I posted a poll right after that everybody took as I was like being negative, but I meant to use it and write something. But my fingers don't know how to type anymore for some reason right now. I posted a poll, you know, what's golf's biggest problem? And I put time, cost, difficulty, or other. And, you know, guess how much percentage time and cost of the 100% of votes took up?
Oh, it had to be most.
Like 93%.
Yeah. Yeah,
and to me, that's the whole crux of the thing, is that if you have limits in the technology, all of a sudden, like a real like if you go back a little, all of a sudden the cost of the game goes down, and the time you're not going to have to walk backwards to tees all day,
right?
You know, that's the brilliance of it, and people hit it shorter. They actually will take less time to play because they'll be looking for the ball less.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And they address that and it's we've been kicking this around so long. But again, it gets back to this question earlier of, are the players the most important thing, the professional players the most important thing in the game or not? And they're not, in my view. But unfortunately, we have shifted to where they are. And we think that they play the game well for a while, and they're superhuman, they're special, and then every thought is, of course, is profound and spot on and brilliant, and it's just exhausting. And I think we need to use this time to consider that as much as we love these great players and love watching them, that they are just one part of the sport. It's an amazing
part.
Sport.
A small, very tiny part, really.
Yeah.
They're almost a minority stakeholder in the game. It's so much different than every other professional sport.
I would say that same kind of overall worship of the player has gotten worse in other sports too. But as you noted, the give and take with owners and those other sports keeps.
But the thing about those other sports is they have a reverse relationship where like exponentially more people watch the sport than play.
Well, yeah.
And in golf, less people watch the sport than play it.
Right. Right.
It's unlike anything else.
And the numbers have been really dismal on that front this year. I mean, just incredibly awful, which makes the worship of the players and their stance on anything even more ridiculous as you see the numbers go down. That it may be having the effect that it had in tennis, when they get to a certain point where you sense they're spoiled or they're out of touch, people become even less attracted to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the other aspect we talked, the ownership player thing is that when owners understand that any publicity is good publicity, and the constant sweeping under the rug of issues and stuff limits what the fan knows about players. And when you don't know anything about them, it's harder to be interested in them.
Yeah, it is. So. It is. And yeah, I would agree. And it's also just harder to become drawn to them when they play the game kind of the way they play it, where there's not a lot of shot shaping and where it's a game we can't relate to as much as we used to. And that's then a sport where, as you say, it's the sport where more people play it than watch it. And that relatability thing has always been something that I have no idea how you measure it other than a survey, but we may be seeing that kind of hit home here now, where again with these and obviously ratings drops are also related to Tiger not playing and cord cutting and different things and long telecasts. But the numbers this year are just stunning every week, where what should be a good final round watched by a good size audience, and it's down 20-30%, and with good leaderboards and compelling finishes, there's no other way to spend the numbers. And you have to wonder if there were the options until recently, and people went to the other places. And did we talk about the NASCAR thing where they're really focused on the way the races are conducted again? And it's not getting a safety thing. People got caught up, oh, this is for safety. And it was made very clear, no, it's actually not. They used to do safety, but this is more about seeing lead changes and strategy,
the thrill of
daring,
the thrill of the pace.
Yeah, they don't want to watch them just go around in circles and see who goes the fastest and stay and whose pit crew holds the car together better. They want to see the lead changes and drama and somebody taking a chance, going for a green in two. Oh, there we go. Sorry, got into golf again.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that when I thought about that thrill is like, there's no thrill of going for a green and two anymore. It's just like, okay, he hit a good drive. He's got an iron in.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, oh, he needs to hit this cut 3 wood over water. You know, I guess that did happen in Honda with Fleetwood, but, you know, that's so rare.
Even the short par four now has become... It's data driven.
Yeah.
So the decision to drive a short par four is made before the round instead of at the moment. There's still some, of course, but increasingly we're seeing somebody just go by what the numbers tell them and not that have face that moment where they have to make the decision. And that's the most compelling thing, I think, in all of golf is that moment when the player stands there and argues. And like you said, the Fleetwood moment at Honda was maybe one of the best moments this year, really. And
outside of the fan yelling.
And thankfully he didn't hear it.
Yeah.
Thankfully. I still don't know how. I guess the person was right next to the mic. And it is a big wide hole, I guess. I'm just glad he didn't hear it. That's all I know. Because that would have been so awful.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it these are things and values that we have a chance to assess. Now, as we're discussing this, I predicted no Masters, but because there are golf writers who are sitting around and looking for anything to cover, some people have been sharing that they've had random hotel reservations in Augusta, Georgia, the week of October 8th through the 11th, randomly canceled for reasons they were not expecting. So
wow.
read into that what you'd like. I think that is when they, if they were going to do it, they would have to do it. Because I heard you and Brendan on the Shotgun talking late October, early November, which I had heard too as the time they had asked volunteers. But remember, the Masters field this year is huge.
Yeah.
And I don't think they could finish those days. So, you know, again, assuming they, you know, they like to sleep in there at Augusta. They don't like to start things too early. They're not morning people, and they don't ever want somebody teeing off before 8 a.m. if they don't have to.
Marina Alex, the LPGA player, had a room canceled.
Yeah. Now the better question is why was she going to be in Augusta in October? I don't know, but it's, so anyway, it's something to ponder. I'm going to try and see what the rates are and see
maybe
what
lock in something cheap,
lock
here.
In something for fun. Of course,
check out Airbnb.
Of course, then you and I both have to ask the good lords at Augusta to consider us for a credential, which, you know, we haven't been successful at as digital bloggers, but we might, you know, maybe this will convince them to change their mind.
Who knows? We'll see. You know, they haven't been friendly to the fried egg.
Yeah, they're still kind of working on their view of digital media in some parts of the property. Other parts they're all in on digital. It's a different place there for sure.
Yeah. So, hey, thanks for coming on.